The Sunshine Coast Regional District is in the territories of the Squamish and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. This photo today is the opposite one of the one I showed you last week. We're looking the other way from the mountain, which is up northeast of Howe Sound towards Squamish. It is important when in local government to keep perspective. So, Zoom etiquette, please stay muted unless you are needing to talk. It's helpful if your real name is showing on the screen so we know who you are, and there will be a question period at the end of my presentation and then again at the end of our guest speakers, so that's a good time to hold questions. If you're there's something that absolutely can't wait, type it in the chat and it should be brought to my attention. I'd like to give a plug for my website, as always, everythingelphinstone.ca. So, caveats and disclaimers, I am not an expert on regional government, I didn't study political science at university, nor have I read all the acts, nor have I worked in government. My knowledge of regional districts has been picked up as I went, as a voter, as a community member, as a reporter for a local newspaper, and now as an elected director. I will undoubtedly get a few things wrong, but I can deliver on the opinions. And to make my bias very, very clear, I am a rural director representing an unincorporated rural area, and that's my focus. Finally, this is an evolving presentation. It evolved yesterday and this afternoon. I keep kind of, and between times that I offer it, I learn more. So, orientation and housekeeping, we did that. SCRD, that's what's coming next. I'll start on the challenges and then we'll finish that next week. And questions around about 3:45 or 3:50. So there we are. 1967. I don't know about you folks, but when I think of 1967, I think of Carnaby Street and go-go boots and the yellow submarine. But they didn't seem to have made it to the Sunshine Coast, at least not judging from the Tsleil-Waututh Peninsula times. This is January 1967, kind of looks like 1927, and but then that's kind of appropriate because really our laws and government processes lag miles behind the times. So at that time, you know, the BC population was about 35% of what it is now, the SCRD population, about the same, village of Tsleil-Waututh, 468 people. Etc. The population at that time was 75% rural, and our first budget was $39,500. Holy crackers. A lot has changed. This is just your sneak peek behind the scenes at the SCRD offices. This is the hallway outside the corporate officer's office with of the boards since 1967. So there we were in 1967. For those of you who are local, these eight guys in suits, the one on the left-hand picture, all the way on the left at the back, that's John McNevin. And seated in front at the right is Frank West. And in the second photo, I believe that's Cliff Gilker at the back on the left. And at the front on the left is Frank West again. So we have a Frank West Hall and a Cliff Gilker Park. So, what changed in the next 50 years? I don't know. There were eight guys in suits. That's a big reason
I love
that
you,
I ran for local office, local government office. So, you know, and nothing against any of these guys in suits, by the way. They are individually all interesting people who have a lot to offer. But en masse, they are not reflective of the community that they represent. So, the Sunshine Coast Regional District is a ribbon of communities, if you can see my cursor, there we go. The population, well, most of it is right here, and then some of it right up here, and then all the rest of it is a vast hinterland, and our boundaries follow the height of land, pretty much, in the mountain ranges. The Tsleil-Waututh Nation territory is pretty much the same until you get down here to Howe Sound, and Howe Sound is the Squamish Nation. So I'm just going to digress for a moment to the history of settlement on the Sunshine Coast. The ocean was the original highway for thousands of years along the coast. Indigenous people traveled by water and they settled at good landing spots. And when white settlers arrived, they pretty much did the same thing. When George Gibson set up housekeeping in Gibson's, it was a normal thing to row to Vancouver for supplies. From 1899 to 1956, the coast was a series of Union steamship stops, such as Hopkins Landing, Gibson's Landing, Grantham's Landing, Half Moon Bay, etc. The ships carried people and freight. They stopped at wharves and at seasonal floats. In my area at Chester Beach down here, there was a seasonal float. The ship pulled up to it, people got off, and then folks brought rowboats across to pick up the passengers. Ferry service between Langdale and Horseshoe Bay started in 1951. Well, actually, it wasn't Langdale at the time. It went straight to Gibson's, and then it eventually went to Langdale. So it wasn't really until that time that a highway started being built. And on our part of the coast, what they did is they just joined up existing cow tracks, which really explains the condition of our highway. The full highway opened in 1962 so that you could drive the length of the coast from Langdale down here to Earl's Cove up there. So there was a big turnover in the 2018 election. Most of the directors of the board were new. Two directors had previously served at the board table. That's Darnell DeSeegers and Keith Julius had previously been on for stints at the SCRD, but pretty much we were a new board. And I'm just going to stop for a second here to say, this is the best board I have ever served on. It's been a privilege and a pleasure to work with such a highly engaged group of people. Everybody works really hard, comes prepared, shows up, and we all have different points of view, but we are able to engage in respectful disagreement, which is huge. And by the way, we've had quite a bit of fun as well. I think one of the reasons for this is that everybody at the table, even the younger members, bring a great deal of life experience to the table. Some deep and some very varied life experience. So I'm going to go through the areas of the Sunshine Coast. So we start with Area A. And Area A is over 50% of the area of the Sunshine Coast is in Area A. But there's only 3,000 people. And most of those people are in the lower left-hand corner with the hinterlands up on the right, which sounds awfully familiar somehow. This area includes Jervis Inlet all the way up to Princess Louisa Inlet, Nelson Island. It's a big area. There's a lot of remote places up there. The economy, there's fishing, commercial fishing, there's resource industries such as forestry and mining. There's a lot of tourism. There's several high-end resorts. Of course, there's a lot of boat traffic in the summer. Pender Harbor is very much its own independent and self-contained community with a commercial core, Chamber of Commerce, Legion, Health Center, Pool, Harbor Authority, Heritage Society, School of Music, you name it. Pender Harbor kind of has it. But it also has a lot of seasonal homes, and some of these summer cottages look like mansions. It is a complicated area for a lot of reasons. It has a lot of small services. There are two fire departments for these 3,000 people. One is run by the SCRD in Egmont, and the other is a fire improvement district. There's three water systems, the North and South Pender and Egmont. There are 9 small sewer treatment plants that the SCRD operates. Pender has looked at incorporation a number of times over the years, but they do not have the population, the tax base to support incorporation. So over to Len. If I were to give Twitter handles to all my fellow directors, Len would be all in guy. He is a total failure at retirement. He retired after a career with TELUS, then he started his own contracting company and ran it for 10 years. Then he retired and he Trump landed up on every board and nonprofit in the area. Rotary, Heritage, Harbor Authority, you name it. Everyone in Pender knows Len. He was born and raised there. So it is no surprise that he was talked into running for office. Len puts in at least 60-hour weeks on SCRD work. And he does a lot of liaising with his community. And as I just said, there's a lot of community groups to liaise with. And when he wants to understand something, he really digs in. He was concerned about the decisions we needed to make about our Chapman Creek water system. So he went back and read all the reports for the last 25 years, then the technical appendices and the engineering reports, and then he checked all the figures. He said, I know this because he sent me his work. So he concluded that the information that we had received was correct and was confident to make the decision. He does a similarly deep dive on the budget, and I will tell you right now, I don't do that deep a dive. And we're not recording. Karen, if we can record, that would be great, but we're not. Sorry, I missed that. Next, we get to Half Moon Bay.
Recording in progress.
Good. Thank you. So, this is sort of the least logical of the areas. It's cut in half by Seashell Inlet. There's pretty much nobody on the right-hand side. Everybody's living on the left-hand side down by the Strait of Georgia. There's very little commercial, and it's mostly residential, and it's mostly low-density residential. There are two independent power projects up on Salmon Inlet and Narrows Inlet, which are a big chunk of the tax base for this area. Lori came to our board with the most political experience of any of us, having served 10 years on the school board, including several years as chair. I feel that Lori is our diplomat. She was the chair of the board for 3 years, and she put in a lot of invisible but crucial work behind the scenes, making sure that the board and the staff were working well together. And that really set the foundation for success, I think. And as chair, she's brilliant at doing all the stuff that I really hate, like cutting ribbons and giving heartwarming speeches and kissing babies. You know, I cut the baby and set the ribbon on fire and then run for the hills.
Oh, Donna, you're so great.
So, next we get to Roberts Creek. Roberts Creek, also primarily residential with the small commercial core around the Gumboot restaurant and the general store. Low density, a lot of large rural lots, 5-10 acres. Incidentally, there are a lot of businesses, home-based businesses on these rural properties. And that's true all across the Sunshine Coast. And sometimes they're surprisingly large, should note, on these rural properties. And we don't know where they are either. Long story. Len gets Princess Louisa Inlet. Andreas gets the landfill, which is in Area D. Another key fact to know about this area is that all of the properties along and below the highway have regional water service, but everything above the highway does not. They're on wells, and although they have fire protection, there is some practical limits to how much fire protection you can provide for properties without regional water. Okay. The creek is known for its funky ambiance, such as the Higgledy Piggledy Parade, and it is the home of Earth Day celebrations. If you watch carefully, you will still see tie-dye and dreads, although skyrocketing real estate prices mean that the average home is now over the $1 million mark in Roberts Creek. I call Andreas the outsider, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It's because he grew up in both Canada and Europe, and he speaks several languages and has a very global attitude towards our issues. He's the one most likely to point out that Canadians are obsessed with home ownership over renting, but, you know, in Switzerland, half the people rent all their lives, and it's fine. And he has also been known to say that folks in Europe, or local governments in Europe, don't build ice arenas, and everybody seems to manage just fine. Somebody else does. So he only lived here for a few years before being elected and was totally new to politics, but he has a background in tourism, business, and recreation. He's a skier and a CrossFit trainer, and he uses his mighty privilege only for good. That's me. I'm Area E. Yay. You can see on the map right there that mine is the smallest area by far, but I have the most population. Area E is primarily a bedroom suburb of Gibson's, the town of Gibson's. Although we have 15% of my area is in the agricultural land reserve, and it is some of the best farmland on the Sunshine Coast, especially along Henry Road and Huff Road. I can count the number of bricks and mortar businesses in my area on two hands. We're on regional water, we're in the fire protection area, and I just don't have hinterlands that I have to worry about. A crucial fact about Area E and also Area F is that our mailing address is Gibson's, BC. For that reason, a large percentage of the population think that they live in the town of Gibson's. So every election, a bunch of them turn up at town hall ready to vote for the mayor, and then they discover that they don't live in the town. So this is one of the reasons that I try to do education. Another crucial fact about Elphinstone is that it was traditionally the most affordable area on the Sunshine Coast. There was a lot of development in the 60s through the 80s, so working class families moved here, and also people on fixed incomes. I have a number of mobile home parks. This is no longer true. The skyrocketing property values are pushing people out. We are being gentrified by market pressures, whether we like it or not. I've lived on the coast for 25 years and been involved in a lot of community organizations, so my name was pretty well known when I ran for politics. And I also had the advantage of having covered all three councils for a local newspaper for the previous 2 years, so I was probably the most current on SCRD issues. And here we have Area F, the second most challenging area in the regional district. It is a collection of small scattered communities and islands. It's the Landings again, Grantham's Landing, Hopkins Landing, Williamson's Landing, Port Mellon and Langdale. Also, Keats Island, Gambier Island, and Anvil Islands, which are all in the Islands Trust. Along with these, North and South Thormanby, which are in Area B, are also in the Islands Trust. Area F has the largest taxpayer on the Sunshine Coast, which is the mill at Port Mellon. Also, Hillside Industrial Park and Twin Creeks, which are major industrial areas. The Regional Water Service only serves the little bottom corner of Area F, and there are a bunch of small water systems, such as Grantham's, Langdale, and Eastbourne, which are operated by the SCRD, and Hopkins Landing, which is an improvement district. A large portion of this area is outside our fire protection boundaries. Mark is boots on the ground guy. Despite having 2 degrees, one in library science and one in geology, he worked for 21 years for Gibson's and the SCRD in administration, parks, public works, water, and wastewater. When we start talking about infrastructure, he's the only one at the board table and often the only one in the room who has run a sewer system and has actually unblocked sewer pipes. He and his partner also grow most of their own food on their property, which he calls subsistence farming. He has educated me on the difference between a spade and a shovel. It turns out they are not the same thing at all. Mark's library degree shows when he researches an issue. He is the king of finding data online, and he's always willing to help educate people. District of Seashell is three physically separated areas connected by the Seashell Indian Government District in the middle, which is a fairly weird situation. The original village of Seashell was just the downtown core where I'm circling my cursor, but there was a major boundary expansion in 1986 which took in the surrounding areas, encompassing Wilson Creek, Davis Bay, Selma Park, East Porpoise Bay, Sandy Hook, Tawanek, West Porpoise Bay, and West Seashell. sea shelt has grown rapidly in recent years. They passed 10,000 population in 2016's census and got a second seat at the SCRD board table. Darnelda is get it done woman. She is on her third elected term to Sea Shelt Council. She is currently the chair of our board as well as the mayor of Sea Shelt. She is phenomenally organized. Alton is our youngest member on the SCRD board, and I'm going to call him the Maverick. In addition to his two roles, which is, you know, Sea Shelt counselor and SCRD director, he runs two businesses. He recently got his electrical contracting qualifications, and he has a young family. I have no idea how he does this all. He is the one who most often holds a minority viewpoint on our board, but I always appreciate the issues he raises and his well-thought-out arguments. I also really value his candor and his patience and compassion when dealing with people in our community who are angry and lashing out. And Sea Shelt Indian Government District. This is completely unique in BC. This is actually a municipality. It was created in 1987 by federal and provincial legislation, which allowed it to qualify for municipal benefits available to any other municipality in BC, and to enact laws and bylaws the same way. Their seat at the SCRD table is as a municipality. At the time regional districts were set up, nobody thought about First Nations. So in many cases, they aren't at the table. They are increasingly coming to the table, but the situation doesn't exactly fit under the old legislation. The Sea Shelt Nation is a real challenge. There's something over 1,000 members, and they are being a nation, a municipality, a family, and a whole lot of businesses. They're running all kinds of business ventures, and on top of that, they are dealing with the legacy of residential schools. They have just finished a project of ground-penetrating radar on the site of the old residential school in Sea Shelt. So the members of Sea Shelt Council, and there are five, and they're on a different election schedule than we are, they don't have a lot of time, and frankly, they don't show up at our meetings very often. This is not surprising, but it's a little frustrating. And so I don't know Alvina really well, and I can't tell any wicked stories about her. Finally, last but not least, the town of Gibson's, incorporated in 1929, 27 years before Sea Shelt, all know. It is small. 4.3 kilometers. As a comparison, Stanley Park is 4 square kilometers. That's how small Gibson's is. It's worth noting that if Gibson's had succeeded in doing a boundary expansion back in the day to include parts of area E and F, then it would be very much the same size as Sea Shelt. That the greater Gibson's area is about 10,000 people. I'll dub Bill the voice of experience. He's the mayor as well as being the SCRD director, but he's had a career in local government. From 2002 to 2007, he was actually the CAO of the town of Gibson's. Then he retired, and this is another failure at retirement we're looking at here. Then he got into consulting work, and he has served twice as the interim CAO for the District of Sea Shelt. He's also been the CAO for the village of Queen Charlotte in Haida Gwaii, and the CAO for the hamlet of Tuktoyaktuk. And a secret that not everybody knows about Bill is that he started his career as an undercover narcotics officer with Vancouver Police. So now this is the important slide. These are the people you don't see.
Yeah.
This is our senior staff. Leadership team who get all the work done. When we pass a motion, somebody has to go out and do it. this is an outstanding team, I think. And I think part of their strength is that they've been through some crazy times. 2019 was the year of four CAOs. Our former CAO departed. The corporate officer took on the role of acting CAO. Then she decided to move too. Then we had an interim CAO, and then we hired Dean as our CAO. And it's, I think it kind of brought the senior leadership team together. Mm-hmm. And then we had crazy times. Dean was still driving his household goods to the coast when he was
moving
when
our
first state of emergency hit. I've actually lost track of how many state of emergencies we had in the last 2 years, but I think it was seven. Seven emergency operations center activations. We had the washout of Lower Road. We had the COVID pandemic. We had a landslide under our main water main intake. We had the heat dome where we had to open cooling centers. We had a drought where we went to stage four restrictions and were preparing for what to do if we actually ran out of drinking water. Then we had flooding due to atmospheric rivers, flooding and landslides, more landslides on private property. It's been a ride. And during this time, staff have also had to deal with all the COVID disruptions, which have changed the way that everybody works. Everybody is now working hybrid, partly at home and partly in the office. So just brief introduction. So Dean joined us. He was hired in late 2019 and hit the ground in 2020. First thing, only two of this group have been in their positions for longer than 10 years. Tina came up through the ranks. She's our chief financial officer. And Jerry has been in HR for at least 10 years. The rest are all relatively new. Remco and Ian joined 5 or 6 years ago. Sherry was promoted to corporate officer in 2019. Now, I can't say enough nice things about Sherry. And the newest person, Shelley, joined us in June of last year. Collectively, they put a huge amount of overtime in. They do a great deal of work. This is a time to say that a relationship of trust between staff, between the staff as a team, and between the staff and the elected is essential to run a healthy organization. Otherwise, you degenerate into constant suspicion and defensiveness, and it is just so difficult to get anything done. So, to get back to the demographics of the SCRD, the population is 49% rural. 49% of the people live in unincorporated areas. We have a high percentage of seniors. The median age on the Sunshine Coast is 55, or at least in Gibson's anyway. Those figures are 2016, but I don't expect that they will change a lot when we get the new census figures. This is a really interesting one. This is the number of dwellings that are seasonally occupied. In other words, summer homes or part-time homes or people pre-tiring, you know, buying a place here in anticipation of retiring. In 2016, it was almost 50% in Area F. The 2021 census is really different, and I'm very suspicious of the accuracy, to be quite blunt, because I think what happened is a lot of people were sheltering in their vacation homes during COVID. But how many of them have really truly moved here permanently is another question. There certainly has been an urban exodus into the rural areas, but we don't know. I feel wait and see over the next few years. Who pays the taxes? That makes a huge amount of difference. For the SCRD as a whole, we have an 86% residential tax base. That's important because residential taxpayers pay a lower rate than the commercial and business, quite a lower rate, and they're very price sensitive, to put it mildly. Residential taxpayers want a lot of services and they don't want to pay very much for them. whereas businesses at least have the option of considering it a cost of doing business and adding it to their the cost of goods sold. When you look at it by area, this is where it gets really, really interesting. At least to me, it does. So if you look at area A here, yellow is residential. So area A has a little base of utilities, industries, business, etc., as well as being a lot of residential taxes. Then you get to area B, Lori's area, and what you see, the big orange bit there, that's those two independent power projects. Those are utilities paying into her tax base. If you go over here to my tax base in area E, I'm 98% residential. And I'm just, whereas then in area F, that has the mill over here, there's that big blue bar. That's the mill, and that's the industrial parks in area F. And they also have some utilities over there. So it makes a huge difference. And you can also see a big difference, incidentally, between Seashell here and Gibson's here. Gibson's is a small, dense area, and it has a very active commercial port. So they are not as reliant on the residential tax base as Seashell is. Mm-hmm. And I'll just add one other important thing about taxes, which is that property taxes are paid based on the value of improvements to the land, at least for industrial. So the mill, which has a lot of big buildings stuffed with very expensive equipment, pays a lot of property taxes. In my area, I have a gravel mine. And what a gravel mine is mostly a big hole in the ground with a bunch of piles of sorted aggregates,
yeah,
and some settling ponds and a few Britco trailers. They do not pay very much taxes. They do contribute to employment stuff in the area. But in terms of property taxes, they're not a big contributor. And given, you know, in the resource hinterland of BC, this sort of thing matters.
Yeah.
So these are some of the services that we offer at the SCRD. There are 75 of them. Some of them everybody pays into. Some of them a lot of people pay into. It's complicated. And the services range from very large services, like the regional water service,
Merci, Mama.
To incredibly small services like street lighting services for one street. This is something you can look this up and get your magnifying glass out. This is page 47 of the current financial plan, and this shows all of our services going vertically down the screen. That's the services that we have, and going across is which area pays into which service. And you don't actually have to be able to read the numbers to see that it varies a whole heck of a lot. So right across the top of the screen there, is the very first line is general government. And you can see that everybody pays into general government. But there are very few services, in fact, that everybody does pay into. And for most cases, you know, only one area pays in, or only one part of one area pays in. So short version, it's complicated. So SCRD residents get two bills. They get the property tax bill on the left, and they get a utility bill on the right. The property tax bill is sent to you by the province. We don't collect our own taxes directly. The province sets the school tax, the provincial rural tax, and the police tax, without consulting us, I might add. And that, at least on my bill, is 40% of the bill. Then we set our own taxes. There are taxes based on assessment, which is most of the property bill, and then there are parcel taxes where you pay per property a flat rate. I'm not going to go into all the details on that. Then there are utility bills where you pay for the service, like garbage collection. Just because some people will want to know, if you live in a municipality, there is something called a mill rate. You can go online to the BC government website and download something called 702, Schedule 702, which will give you the mill rate for every municipality in BC. And all you have to do is multiply that per $1,000 of assessed value of your property, and you know what you're going to pay in taxes. This totally doesn't apply to regional districts because of the fact that all of our services are different and they are applied differently to different areas. Mm-hmm. So I just did one example here from my area. So I've got a property here on Chester Road. It's getting water service and blah-de-blah-de-blah. $2,500. Then up the way on Reed Road, there's a property near the top of the hill there that's outside our water service area. They have their own well, so they're not paying for water. And then on Cypress Way, a little ways away, these folks are on the small sewer treatment plant. So they're paying for sewer. So these three houses could have identical assessments, but they're paying different taxes. And that's what makes it, everything is apples and oranges, bananas, grapefruit, pineapples. So it's hard. I didn't have time to update this, but this just gives you a general idea of where the money goes. The operating budget this year is $53 million. The capital budget is $42 million. The big services are recreation and culture, and two-thirds of that, or more than two-thirds of that, is our five recreation facilities, which is three pools and two ice rinks. The next biggest spend is water, $13 million. Then we have to deal with garbage and recycling, no choice about that. $7.5 million goes there, $6.5 million to transit, and $4.5 million for fire and emergency. You have to understand local government speak to make sense of any of this. Like, I don't know about you, but environmental services does not say sewage to me. And in my area, the health services is the cemetery, I'm not going there. So the areas range, there are some individual services have budgets as large as $10 million. And the smallest one, I believe, is there's a street lighting service, Burns Street. Street lighting, $261 a year. So, very, very different. Okay, I'm going to do about 5 minutes here on the challenges of the regional district model, 5 or 10 minutes. And I'm going to finish this off next week. Because we have our guest here from New Brunswick, I've shifted the order of this a bit, and I'll revisit it next week. So I'm going to skip budget silos right now, but I'm going to talk about our tax system. So the Canadian tax system for local government is archaic. In the U.S. and Europe, local governments receive a share of income tax, and they have other sources of funding, so they are not so reliant on property taxes. Our tax model places a very heavy burden on low-income families and people on fixed incomes. Property tax is called a regressive form of taxation because it is assessed on your property value, not on your income. And senior government has downloaded a lot of services to local government, and we are pushing these onto property taxes, and this is a problem. Mm-hmm. Regional districts have responsibility without authority. Boy, I could talk about this one all day. So we must provide clean drinking water to the public, but we do not have the authority to protect our watersheds. This is a huge problem across BC. The only two protected watersheds are Vancouver and Victoria. Most other people are in a bad position. We have to handle garbage and recycling, but we cannot limit the deluge of consumer packaging that's coming at us. And one of the things that really irks me is that we're supposed to do regional planning, but we don't control the roads. And so if we can't decide where the roads are going or not going, it's pretty darn hard to do regional planning. The province, on the other hand, has authority without responsibility. And I'll give you an example. So Ministry of Transportation and Infrastructure does our subdivision approval, but they don't follow up. They are not responsible for the outcomes. They don't live here. They're off in Coquitlam. And they don't know local conditions. And it's incredibly frustrating. Stormwater is even more frustrating because so many different ministries and parties can make decisions legally that affect stormwater in my area, but nobody is responsible. And I'll give you some examples. There's a gravel mine. There's private properties who have been dumping stuff and causing landslides into the creek. There's town operations. There's forestry, clear-cut logging. There's private developments. There's all kinds of things are in, and Modi's my, I'm always after them, but their position on stormwater is that once it leaves the road, it's not their problem. And this leaves, if your house is washed out, too bad, you know, you're hooped, because very, very few people have overland flooding insurance. It's almost impossible to get unless you live in an area where you can't get flooded. So it's a lot of people are getting hurt, and there is no recourse. Okay, underrepresented rural areas. Seashell has 7 elected people for a population of 10,000, so that's about 1 per 1,500 people. Gibson's has 5 for, say, 5,000 people, so they have about 1 per 1,000 people, and I'm it for 3,800 people. And some areas of the province, some of the rural areas have as much as 16,000 people in an electoral area. It is really difficult. I mean, it could be worse. If you remember from last week, the distribution of people in rural areas across Canada, there are millions of people who in unincorporated areas who have no local representation whatsoever. Their only way to get services is to deal with the provincial government. So I'm just looking through my stuff here, and let's see. Oh, I'm going to drop into this for a bit. We heard that great description from Sally Watson last week of how she came to be elected in her electoral area. The first person had served there for 28 years, and then he found somebody to replace him. And when she came along, nobody in her area realized it was an elected position because they'd never had an election. That is probably not unique to her regional district. In the last provincial election, 68 of 158 regional directors were acclaimed. That's a rate of 43% acclamation. 3 regional districts were 100% acclamations, including the one here. Another 7 RDs had 50% or more acclamations. And regional districts are not well understood by the population, and the elections are not competitive, let's say. And there are a lot of barriers. And so you end up with the same person in office for years. Jim Abram, who represents Area C of Strathcona Regional District, has been in office since 1988. And, I mean, he is a really good guy. He's done a great job for his community, but that is a long time to have one person as your representative. It is very hard to attract good candidates. And this is true in electoral areas, you know, across the country for many reasons, including poor pay, which I could go on about for some time. But also, you know, the workload, the complexity of the issues, and so they're the candidates in my area. I'll just for a minute say, in one of the previous elections, there was a member of the Buy Nothing Party, then another time there was the fellow who ran on the rooster platform because he was mad about the roosters making too much noise in his area. So I'm going to, stop sharing at this point, and let's go back to open it up for questions. That was a lot of information, folks, but I think I'll stop there right for the moment. And wow, look at this. It's nice to see you all. So, Steve, jump right in there.
I'll be quick. If you talk about 28 years being in Strathcona, they have nothing on Caribou. We had one director in for 40 years. And I agree that's problematic just because you can't recruit. And the workload obviously is increasing. And the other thing is, I totally 110% agree with you about Modi. Their practices are extremely problematic for us. There's just no great communication, and it's just problematic. And I have people moving up from the Okanagan Metro, and it's causing a real stress because residents have been here forever, don't want any new services, but people moving in want these services. So it's a real challenge to manage expectations. So, and I don't think that's going to go away anytime soon.
No, it isn't. Or do you have them together? Yeah. Oh, sorry, Karen, if you could unspotlight me, please. Chandel.
Yeah.
Jump up.
Yeah, well, and I just wondered, so does that mean that you only...
Could you or one of the other elected officials quickly run us through the process of a subdivision and how the failure with MOTI around subdivision happens, the lack of communication, opportunities for input by elected officials versus community, etc.
Oh my God. I honestly, that is a big can of worms that I don't really want to get into right at the moment. When you are developing in a rural area, you have to deal with MODI, you have to deal with Vancouver Coastal Health for septic, and you deal with the regional district staff as well. But the final approval is MODI's. And the Act says that MODI may consult our official community plan, but they don't have to, which begs the question of why do we have an official community plan? But it is a complicated inherent process, and I don't think I'm going to go there right now.
Okay.
Okay, Sage.
I'm so excited. I don't know. He has a bank appointment.
Yeah, about MODI. In Kendrick Harbor, two things. Our roads are, they've been reported. There's a place where one road that comes to a stop sign where it meets the another road.
So
they put cones around, so it ends up being one lane for a couple of car lengths, because what the Ministry of Highways is calling a road depression, the hole is so big that nobody can drive down that lane, and it's right at a stop sign. So, and it was supposed to be fixed in a couple of weeks. That was in November, I believe. Now it's March, still not fixed. And I noticed in the paper, Coast Reporter, this week, a good write-up about an invitation to the Minister of Transport, I guess, from Modi to actually take the ferry here and drive from Langdale to Earl's Cove on our roads and see exactly what we're dealing with, which I'm hoping will happen, and I don't know what we can do to ensure that that happens, and I don't want him to just drive to Seashelt. I want him to do the whole coast, because the road from Seashelt to Earl's Cove is even, it's probably the worst part of the highway.
You know, there's so many places competing right now for worst part of the highway or worst disaster road. Our roads have not received any serious maintenance in 30 years, and they're collapsing in a number of places. Mm-hmm. And part of the challenge of the RD model is that Modi is not required to even inform us what they're doing, much less consult us. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the real sticking points that we need a better solution for. And I'm not even going to go into some of the hellacious spots in my area, because it's bad. So, Annalisa.
Annalise.
Hi, thanks Donna for doing this again. This is awesome. Mm-hmm. And the road from Earl's Cove to Egmont, holy smokes, that's a bad road. But I wanted to ask you, you mentioned that Pender Harbor and Egmont, for instance, were two small communities to incorporate, and I was wondering what the population would have to be in order for that to be a possibility. Thanks.
That's actually a really good question. I'm not sure what the answer is, because it depends somewhat on, you know, your tax base and the physical area and a lot of considerations. Like, take the town of Gibson's. Because it's very small and very dense, they manage, but they just kind of squeak past because the demands on municipal governments keep increasing. Like, there's higher levels of regulation. You're supposed to do more and more and more. And if you've only got a small population, you've got more and more of a tax burden, which I'll be getting into. My suspicion is that 10,000 might be, you know, somewhere around the sweet spot, depending on where you are. But that is my guess. So, Cassandra, did we get to you before or not?
Hey, Donna. No, let me put my hand down here. Thank you. I'm so excited to be listening to this, and I love your opinions about all of it. It's great. I've witnessed from a distance, like, all the challenges of having so many separate governments in such a small region, and I imagine there are challenges with the associated administrative and management costs for each. Mm-hmm. I imagine that's probably a little bit larger than needs to be for the same population base in another area, yeah. Perhaps significantly so. So I'm actually really curious about how that might compare to other regions. And I guess that was part of my question is, how do the numbers of representatives for this regional district compare with other regions in the province? And then also at this stage of growth, you know, because lots of times we sort of roll along and grow and we, you know, stay with the system that has existed or was created long ago, mm-hmm. and it may not be the most efficient anymore. Mm-hmm. Has conversation been had about the division of those sort of areas and the numbers of representatives for regions? Where is that at this stage of the game?
Well, that's a lot of questions, but yeah, we do have a lot of governments here. So by my count, there's seven. There's three municipalities, Seashelt, Gibson's, and the SIGD. There's the regional district. There's the Islands Trust for the islands.
Another one.
There's the Squamish Nation, and there's the Seashelt Nation. all for 32,000 people. And it is problematic, and there have been periodic discussions, but I'll tell you right now, if there was an easy answer, we would have found it. I'm not sure what the best way forward is. We're going to talk more about this later in the course. There's been several studies on different versions of restructure. People have kicked around the idea of a regional municipality like Northern Rockies. I don't know that that would work here. Somebody would really have to sit down and start crunching the numbers and thinking about it. There's two separate issues. One of them is the efficient delivery of services. The other one, though, is governance. And I can tell you right now that if we were going to create one giant municipality with everybody in it, the Pender Harbor people would put up the barricades. There's no way that they would be playing. And I can't even see, could you see a shotgun marriage between Seashell and Gibson's? It would be a challenge. And talking of shotgun weddings, we're going to be talking about one pretty soon. So, one more question, Susan.
Hi, thanks, Donna. Moti has come up quite often, and yeah. I think one of the challenges, I live over on Vancouver Island in the Couchin Valley Regional District, and the issue we're running into with Moti is still focused on moving vehicles and not active transportation. I was wondering how that works out with you folks in your areas, because we are abutting that to a lot of more urban areas, and they're approving development, but we don't have sidewalks and we don't have street lights, so it's dangerous for cyclists and pedestrians.
Well, I'm actually
heard the same thing at a Matrosen.
Sidewalks and streetlights myself, but transportation corridors, like connecting paths so that pedestrians can get between neighborhoods. Modi has a lot of policy around that sort of thing. They don't actually follow their own policy. That's the truly frustrating thing. Boy, I could go on about it forever. A Modi employee admitted to me the other day that their viewpoint about pedestrians crossing the highway is that they don't want anyone, they don't want pedestrians on the highway, anywhere near the highway, right? They want everybody in a motor vehicle because that's what they're all about. Mm-hmm. And since our bus runs down the highway, and if you get off at the bus stop, you have to cross the highway, you know, one way or the other, it's not their priority. And it's incredibly maddening. They have lovely active transportation plans that you get off their website, but to just watch what happens on the ground
doesn't happen.
Not if you're
doing that. Yeah. So I'm a firm believer in roadside pathways. Separate the pedestrian cyclists from the vehicle.
Absolutely, we need a lot more of it because it's just not safe. I mean, I'm a cyclist and it's terrifying out there. So we're going to take a 5-minute break, and then we're going to come back with our guest speakers.
Thanks so much. This is so interesting. So, that's Donna McMahon's Sunshine Coast.
I'm a bit worried that Mayor Black said he hasn't got a presentation ready. He's like, I don't have a presentation.
I don't have a presentation either, but I'm excited. I've been talking about this so much over months and months that it seems like it's just built into me that I'm ready to present at any given point.
Excellent. You scared me there for a second. Like, oh my God, was I supposed to have PowerPoints?
I think that it's just a discussion, and in your case, Andrew, I think it's sort of what's happening to you, the circumstances, right? So how can you not talk about it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. So this has been the Green Antlers Waterfowl Podcast, and I am so happy that Donna McMahon does these regional district workshops because I learn a lot about I learn a lot about a lot of things. So I'm going to sign off this episode and we're going to start back up when the presentation starts. So that'll be part two of the Sunshine Coast Regional District Opinionated Elphinstone, Donna McMahon. Thank you so much for listening. I hope that everyone is enjoying. I don't know much about the listeners of the Waterfowl podcast, but I am grateful for you. So have a really nice day.